to believe we live in special times. I really believe heaven is reaching out, calling out to us in unprecedented ways. You know, and like the prophets of old, I believe God today is sending the Blessed Mother. And I think he's sending her in a special way to once again, like John the Baptist, point us back to the path to God, to prepare our hearts for her son, Jesus. And if you look at the past century, you know, just the past 10 years, take a look at the past, you know, just 10 or 20 years, we on Earth, I think, have been experiencing a major, major supernatural episode. There have been reports, unusual reports, of spiritual events coming from every habitable continent. The reports come from deep in the Soviet Union, where there were these towering visions of a Mother of God that announced the fall of communism. You know, when the faith was being persecuted there, people would meet in open-air shrines, and there they would come together, and there were reports of the Virgin Mary visibly appearing to the masses there, even members of the Soviet forces who came to disrupt or arrest these congregations claim to have witnessed these visible manifestations of the Mother of God. There are towering apparitions of Jesus that seem to announce the fall of communism there, as well as Our Lady. In the jungles of Africa, I often speak of Kibeho, Rwanda, where I was, one of the most powerful apparitions of this past, the past 20th century, no doubt. Again, Our Lady came with a very, very serious message, a warning of genocide and the return to God. And we saw in grisly detail the fulfillment of her vision that she gave to these seers. There were warnings that came from, at the time, war-torn Yugoslavia, where the Mother of God reportedly has been appearing since 1981. In fact, it was on this day, on June 24th, 1981, that the Blessed Mother made her first appearance there, and where reports have come that she's been appearing on a daily basis in Medjugorje. Reports range from 35 to 50 million people supposedly having made pilgrimages to this site in former Yugoslavia, now Bosnia and Herzegovina. There, sun pulses and spins and throws off colors of great splendor. From a mountainside in Venezuela, hundreds of competent eyewitnesses claim to have collectively witnessed an apparition. In Zaytun, Egypt, where Muslims and Jews and Christians and non-Catholics all saw the Virgin Mary. 250,000 people reported these visions over a period of 2 years in 1968. And even today, I reported on this probably about 9 months ago, maybe a year ago, there was actual video documentation where others were once again seeing this phenomenon. Whether it is Europe, whether it is Asia, whether we're talking Nicaragua or the Middle East, in Africa, even here in the United States come accounts of an apparitional woman who calls herself the Blessed Virgin Mary, who appears to these seers, gives them inspiration, gives them instruction, gives them messages, including warnings about the future of the world. What is the role of apparitions? Why is heaven at this point in time sending Our Lady? What's occurring now? And what is going to unfold in the not too distant future? Hopefully in the segments ahead, you'll get a deeper understanding of the role of apparitions and the criteria that the church uses to evaluate these. Joining me right now is Michael O'Neill. He's the creator of a website. You might want to check it out, and I'll link to it. I'll put it up at relevantradio.com. The keyword is Drew. It's miraclehunter.com. It's a great resource on Marian apparitions, cited in news articles and blogs all over the world. And Michael's also a member of the Mariological Society of America. He's been interviewed about his research numerous times, including for upcoming projects with the Smithsonian Magazine and the History Channel and the Discovery Channel, amongst others. And he's also worked, believe it or not, if you've not been to the shrine, you should check it out, the Shrine of Our Lady Guadalupe in La Crosse, Wisconsin, for the past 5 years, where he's promoted his work at that incredibly beautiful, beautiful shrine. Hey, Michael, good to talk with you. I'm delighted to have you on the air.
It's good to be with you, Drew.
Yeah, I remember we bumped into each other, I think, at a conference somewhere. You handed me your card. Were we in Chicago? Where were we?
We were in Chicago at the Divine Mercy Shrine there.
Yeah, it was neat, and I'm delighted to be able to bring you on. Let's talk about apparitions. I mean, there's no question there's something remarkable going on in the world today. But this is not a new phenomenon. It's not like it just started 10 years ago. This has taken place since shortly after Christ's resurrection. Help me to understand, help our audience to understand the role of apparitions. And are we seeing an increase in both the frequency and the intensity of these apparitions today?
Sure. Thanks, Drew. In the history of the church, some scholars report the actual number of apparitions to be somewhere in the range of 2,500. Many people, you know of sort of the more famous Fatima, Lourdes, Medjugorje, Guadalupe, but are unaware of the apparitions that have been reported throughout the history of the church. Probably the earliest known apparition was in 40 AD to St. James in Zaragoza, Spain, and that's an apparition known there as Our Lady of the Pillar. Now, if you think 40 AD, you think Mary is probably still alive at that time. Maybe that's considered a bilocation rather than an apparition, but probably the most definitive at that point beyond that is to St. Gregory the Wonder Worker in 231. So as I said, there have been many, many apparitions through the history of the church, but it wasn't probably until Our Lady of Guadalupe in 1531, that being the first, that was investigated by the church. Mm-hmm. Previous to that, you had many apparitions to saints, and we were sort of bolstered up just by popular acclaim in the region that they occurred, but there weren't necessarily investigations that occurred. One thing you have to consider is that many people say, you know, are apparitions truly that important? They're kind of a fringe, strange aspect to our faith. Well, you can just consider a few facts, such as there have been millions converted to Catholicism through apparitions. You can just look at the Our Lady of Guadalupe apparitions in 1531. The following 10 years resulted in approximately 9 million conversions to Catholicism. Some of the largest churches in the world are the results of Marian apparitions. You can even look at St. Mary Major in Rome, one of the great churches of Rome, which of course is built according to the legend that says from 358, the apparition that happened there resulted in the church. Many of the largest movements and societies in the church have resulted. Such orders as the Mercedarians, the Servites, the Passionists, and others have come from Marian apparitions. And you can even just simply look at the rosary, legendarily given to St. Dominic in 1208, or any of the flavors of the scapulars, brown, black, green, or red. Mm-hmm. They're all rooted in Marian apparitions, as is the miraculous medal, of course, as well. So our church undoubtedly has been impacted by apparitions.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, look at the Dominicans, look at the miraculous medal. That was also an apparition to St. Catherine Labouré. You take a look at the apparitions to Bernadette Subaru. I mean, the role of apparitions throughout history have been absolutely amazing. New orders have sprang, new devotions, as you point out, have taken place as well. Hey, my guest today is Michael O'Neill. We're talking a little bit about the role of apparitions. We'll open the phones, too. We'll take some calls and questions for Michael as well. Our toll-free number here is 877-ROME-777. Mike, I only got about a minute, but when I come back, let's you and I talk a little bit about the criteria. I think this is important. I try to stand on this a lot. For evaluating apparitions, you know, what's the criteria the church uses to determine whether something is authentic or whether it is not, and, you know, whether or not we should follow these things or not. So we can get into that and more when we return. All right, folks, I've got to take a break. Don't forget, check out Facebook.com. We'll put a link up there as well and continue our conversation on the other side. Check out Mike's website as well. I've linked to him here at relevantradio.com. The keyword is Drew. And we'll be back with more right after this. Don't go away.
I'm Wendy Weiss, Relevant Radio News. Some 2 million baby cribs from 7 companies are being recalled by the Consumer Product Safety Commission. Most of them are drop-sided cribs that the agency says can entrap an infant or cause suffocation or a fall. So far, there are 16 instances of babies becoming ensnared between the dropped side and the rest of the crib. An American captured in Pakistan last month while hunting terrorist leader Osama bin Laden is back in the U.S. Gary Faulkner has arrived in Los Angeles after being allowed to leave Pakistan without charges. The 50-year-old Greeley, Colorado man was arrested by Pakistani police on June 13th in a forested area near the porous border with Afghanistan. fire crews continue battling the Schultz Fire burning in northern Arizona. Flames have already scorched more than 14,000 acres near the town of Flagstaff. Judge Robert Bork spoke out today to oppose the Supreme Court nomination of Elena Kagan. Bork, the former Supreme Court nominee and circuit judge of the U.S. Court of Appeals, spoke about Kagan's appointment in a conference call earlier today, sponsored by the pro-life group Americans United for Life. Keeping you connected with the church and the world 24 hours a day, this is listener-supported, Relevant Radio.
This is A Closer Look
with Sheila Logminas, examining the culture
and reaching beyond the headlines to bring you the real story.
A self-proclaimed atheist and secular humanist has made a very thoughtful argument against euthanasia worth noting. He says we judge human life today not by its internal worth or moral meaning, but by its financial implications or environmental implications. He's concerned that the views of the very active minority of pro-euthanasia campaigners are likely making a majority of citizens worry about becoming a social, financial, or environmental burden if they become impaired and continue living. As a humanist, he says, I'm opposed to any undermining of the quality of life. It almost makes a pro-life person who opposes any aid in dying want to say, bravo, well said, and it largely is. This is the debate we must have, and we must make it a well-reasoned one with clear thinking and clearly stated beliefs. So here's mine. Once we hold out for any type of mercy killing or aid in dying, for even what seems to be the purest and most compassionate of intentions, we've allowed for exceptions to the natural law. Religiously informed voices speak of the new humanism, as Pope Benedict often does. That's the belief that human life is sacred from conception to natural death. Church teaching on end-of-life issues is clear, comprehensive, and ultimately most protective of human dignity.
Take a closer look with Sheila Logminas, weekdays on Relevant Radio.
Hey everyone, this is Father Rocky. We just finished the year for the priest, and everyone loves the Hail Mary we've been praying on air. But now we want your input for next year. What should we pray for this year? Send us your suggestion at myintention@relevantradio.com. That's myintention@relevantradio.com. In the meantime, would you join me now in a memorare for some very special needs we have at Relevant Radio? We're going to pray this every hour until June 26th, so here we go. Remember, O most gracious Virgin Mary, that never was it known that anyone who fled to thy protection, implored thy help, or sought thy intercession, was left unaided. Inspired by this confidence, I fly unto thee, O Virgin of Virgins, my Mother. To thee do I come, before thee I stand, sinful and sorrowful. O Mother of the Word Incarnate, despise not my petitions, but in your mercy hear and answer me. Amen. Hey, thanks for praying with me. Remember, send your prayer intentions at myintention@relevantradio.com.
If we have joy, will that naturally radiate from us?
I think that's fascinating.
There is no better way to worship God than at the Mass.
That's absolutely right.
Listener supported.
Listener supported.
Relevant Radio. Father Francis Hoffman.
The sacraments are not magic. They require some sort of cooperation and participation on our part with respect to the sacrament of penance. A necessary element of that is our contrition.
Go Ask Your Father on Relevant Radio.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, 25 before the hour. Good afternoon, everyone. Hey, thanks for tuning in. I do appreciate it. Fascinating subject, one of my favorites. I'm talking about the role of Marian apparitions and apparitions in general. Somebody called during the break and says, hey, Drew, what about Jesus? Why is it always the Blessed Mother? Well, there have been reports of Jesus appearing, one of the most famous apparitions of Jesus Christ, of course, Sacred Heart devotion, right? We also had the apparitions of Jesus to St. Faustina, and the Divine Mercy devotion. In the jungles of Africa, Christ supposedly appeared also to Emmanuel Segastasha, a young boy there who was taught things of a higher theological level that he could never have known, was one of the alleged seers in those reported apparitions. And of course, I love this stuff. I, as a documentary filmmaker, made a film called Marian Apparitions of the 20th Century and kind of detailed and took a look at many of these visions. Joining me now, though, is a gentleman who also has a deep passion for these apparitions. Michael O'Neill is the creator of a website called MiracleHunter.com. Great resource to learn more about apparitions that have been approved, that have been condemned, that are in that interim stage, as well as what the church teaches regarding a lot of this stuff. And Michael, that's probably a good point. I want to go back to the phone. We got some interesting calls. But before I do that, let's talk about when the church finally got into the process of saying this is legitimate or this is condemned or this is approved, and what the criteria the church uses ultimately to evaluate reported apparitions.
All right. That's a great question, Drew. Throughout the history of the church, there have been various ways that the church has taken a look at apparitions. Going back to the Council of Constance in 1414 and shortly thereafter the Council of Bale in 1431, it was the first time that the church at large considered what to do about mystical phenomena when they considered St. Bridget of Sweden and her mystical happenings. Later in 1512, the Fifth Lateran Council of the Vatican reserved the ability to approve new prophecies and revelations. The Council of Trent in 1545, that ping-ponged back to the bishops. The bishops then had the authority to investigate and approve the phenomenon before worship could take place. The future Benedict the 14th, Prospero Lambertini, he was the first to sort of lay down the rules of how miracles and private revelations would be used in the canonization process. In 1917, the Code of Canon Law forbade any publication of messages attributed to apparitions without a bishop's explicit approval. And Paul VI in 1966 lifted that in his document on the right to mass media. So the definitive document that exists today is this 1978 document that's called Norms of the Congregation for Preceding Judged Alleged Apparitions and Revelations. And that document basically says this, that the diocesan bishop can initiate the initial investigation, but the National Conference of Bishops of that country can intervene if they don't believe that it's being handled properly, and the Vatican can intervene on top of that. And we have the classic example currently going on today with Medjugorje, of course, where the Bishops' Conference in 1991 got together to formulate a statement after the bishop had initially, and now the Vatican has formed a commission on top of that. So there's this three-tiered approach. So there are three different ways that the church can label an apparition, and I've got them in the categories in general of negative, positive, and worthy of faith expression. So,
what's the actual term? What is it? Non constat de supernaturale, something along those lines?
Yeah, you got it, Drew. I'll give them to you. So the negative one is called constat de non supernaturalitate.
Okay.
And that essentially means it is established that there is nothing supernatural going on here. And that basically will say that there's either glaring errors in the facts, there's doctrinal errors attributed to God or Mary, the visionaries are found to be pursuing things financially, or they're found to be committing gravely immoral acts, or if the visionary is crazy, then they'll rule that out as well. Now, the positive one is given by the Latin formula constat de supernaturalitate, which means worthy of belief in the supernatural character of the event, and it also implies that there's nothing contrary to faith and morals that's come out of it. And so under that positive category, you have such things to consider as there's a great moral certainty that there's a miracle has truly happened. You've got the visionaries being positively evaluated, their qualities. The content of the revelations can't have anything awry, so they're reviewed positively. And then if there is a healthy devotion and spiritual fruits that has resulted at that location.
Right.
Of course, apparitions, people can get swept up in them and over-interested in them, but they really need to, point us back to Christ in the sacraments.
You're right.
You know, and, uh,
No, I was going to say that's a great point because there's a lot of apparitions that people still follow even though the church condemns them. Let me go to the phones. We'll take a quick call or two for you. Folks, you can join me here toll-free. 877-ROME-777. My guest today, Michael O'Neill. We're talking about apparitions, the church's position on them, how they approve them. And Rick in Chicago, welcome. You're on the air. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Drew. Nice to hear you on the radio, as always.
Thank you. You know,
as you mentioned at the beginning of the show, along with this explosion of authentic manifestations of miracles and apparitions, there are the diabolical counterfeit claims of false apparitions and false phenomenon, mystical phenomenon that are deceiving many people. And I wanted to make mention of the Ohio false apparition in Ohio called Maranatha Springs, also known as Holy Love.
Holy Love, right.
Bishop Clark from the Diocese of Cleveland put out a condemnation of the events, but still, pilgrimages are being conducted in Ohio. And I can tell you right here in Chicago, where the epicenter for that is, unfortunately, the Crisis Pregnancy Center, the Women's Center, a number of wonderful people from there, Mary Strom and Rich Wenzel and Janet Beck, are conducting these type of pilgrimages in light of the fact that the bishop has put out this condemnation. And I think that I would like you to address the fact that how important it is that we as Catholics need to be obedient to competent church authority. When the bishop puts out a statement, we are to obey the bishop and submit, okay, because he was directed by the Holy See to put out the statement.
Rick, I couldn't agree with you more. I mean, I am with you 1,000%. When the local ordinary there investigates and finds that, and if you go to the website, you can actually see, if you go to the Archdiocese website there, you can see their actual statement on this particular location. You've got to submit yourself to the final judgment of the church. And folks, again, another big disclaimer here as we get into this issue, that's the position of Relevant Radio, and that's also my position. Whether it is Medjugorje or any other reported apparition that I've gone to or have talked about in the past, if the church rules that this is not from God, that and it is condemned, we have an obligation to stay away from it and trust the incredible wisdom of the church. And Rick, I'm glad you brought that up. Mike, I'm going to let you respond to that as well, because people get very passionate about Bayside, Nisita, Wisconsin, Holy Love in Ohio there. When people are still conducting pilgrimages there, what happens to them? And you know, is that sinful in some respects, that disobedience?
Well, I think it may be considered to be disobedience. And we should obviously follow the pastoral leadership of the local bishop in play there. Now, one of the very interesting points is that when it comes to episcopal approval, the way the system is set up is that even if a bishop rules negatively on an apparition, the following bishop can come in and overturn it. So that's an unfortunate aspect of apparition approval. It isn't until the church gives final Vatican approval on an apparition that it's really set in stone. So I think a lot of people may or may not be aware of this point, but they still are really hoping that in their heart an apparition is true and it truly is false. But we are called to obedience as Catholics, and we must follow what the bishop guides us on.
And that's a great point, because in Garabandal, Spain, in 1961, the Virgin Mary appeared to four kids there, and that has gone back and forth, you know, between the bishops that were there as well. Right now, the church says stay away from this, and I think the faithful have a moral obligation not to pilgrimage to that place or to in any way promote it. I think we've got to always defer to the wisdom of the church. And maybe, you know, others will argue, well, you know, it could be reversed. Look at Divine Mercy. That was banned at some point in time, you know, and that got turned around because of the erroneous translations. Look, you got to be with the church on this. And if the wisdom of the Holy Spirit, you know, illuminates the error, then praise God. But, you know, I think we get in a lot of trouble when we try to think we're wiser than the church. Hey, Mike, stay with me. When we come back, we'll talk more. I'm Drew Mariani. We'll take a look at Medjugorje. We'll take a few more calls as we examine the role of apparitions today. Stay with me.
St. Francis of Assisi used to say, we are called by the gospel to preach the gospel to all creatures. Sometimes we should even use words.
Talk radio for Catholic life.
Relevant Radio.
That's the way it is. Better to live it.
Hello, Father James Kubicki here, and I'd like to share with you something that Pope Benedict said on this day in 2007. It's the feast of the birth of St. John the Baptist, and here's what the Pope had to say. John the Baptist's life was totally directed to Christ, as was that of Mary, Christ's mother. John the Baptist was the voice sent to proclaim the incarnate Word. Thus, commemorating his birth actually means celebrating Christ, the fulfillment of the promises of all the prophets, among whom the greatest was the Baptist, called to prepare the way for the Messiah. He was the first witness of Jesus, having received instructions from heaven. He on whom you see the Spirit descend and remain, this is he who baptizes with the Holy Spirit. This happened precisely when Jesus, after receiving baptism, emerged from the water. John saw the Spirit descending upon him in the form of a dove. It was then that he knew the full reality of Jesus of Nazareth and began to make him known to Israel, pointing him out as the Son of God and Redeemer of man. Behold, the Lamb of God, who takes away the sin of the world. As an authentic prophet, John bore witness to the truth without compromise. He denounced transgressions of God's commandments, even when it was the powerful who were responsible for them. Thus, when he accused Herod and Herodias of adultery, he paid with his life, sealing with martyrdom his service to Christ, who is truth in person. Let us invoke his intercession together with that of Mary, most holy, so that also in our day the Church will remain ever faithful to Christ and courageously witness to his truth and his love for all.
Father James Kubicki is the National Director of the Apostleship of Prayer. For prayer resources and to learn more about the Apostleship of Prayer, visit their website at apostleshipofprayer.org.
I remember one time crying out to God saying, I don't understand. And then in my deepest heart, he just said, your understanding is not required for your holiness.
Hi, I'm Sherry Lamonte.
And I'm Sally Robb. Join us each Sunday for Mary's Touch.
Yes, we dare to believe, and I think that's what we call faith. Believing in something sometimes we can't actually see. Sunday at 8 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Central.
Only on Relevant Radio.
Life as you've never heard it. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, 12 before the hour. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome back. Great to be with you today. We're talking apparitions, trying to understand the role of Our Lady today and ultimately how the Church views all these things. And my guest today is Michael O'Neill. You can check him out by going to relevantradio.com. Keyword Drew. He's got a website, miraclehunter.com. And Michael, I was talking with Rick offline, the guy who just called in about Holy Love, and he was sharing with me that in addition to the bishop, you know, coming out with his formal condemnation of that particular apparition there, he had actually brought in a theologian who examined the content of the message, and he found some real erroneous problems with it. So that's a real issue. When the message is contrary to faith or morals, major red flag for any particular apparition. That said, let's talk Medjugorje real quick, and then I'll take a few calls. You were pointing out that, of course, there's a Vatican Commission now established. When they finally rule, when the Vatican Commission makes its final judgment, then no future bishop's going to come in and ultimately reverse or change that decision, correct?
Correct.
Okay, interesting.
Go
ahead.
There was a statement released, which I'm sure you're aware of, Drew, in 1991, the Zadar Commission, mm-hmm. which is the current statement on Medjugorje. That was done by the Yugoslavian Bishops' Conference. And the quote from that statement says like this: on the basis of studies made so far, it cannot be affirmed, non constate supernaturalitate, not established as supernatural, that these matters concern supernatural apparitions or revelations. So that was the statement done in 1991. Now the current investigation that's going on can overrule that if that's what they find.
Interesting. So we've got categories of approval. You got formal condemnation. You got formal approval. Let's talk briefly, if we could, just about the middle category, so people can understand what that means.
So as you mentioned, we sort of have the thumbs up, positive approval, the thumbs down, negative. And then you've got this mysterious middle category, which I call worthy of faith expression, and that's given by the Latin formulation non constate supernaturalitate, which means it is not established that there is something supernatural. So that differs from the statement it is established that there is nothing supernatural. That would rule it out completely. So it's a very subtle but important difference. So when an investigation comes out with this result, it basically says that, well, the apparition may or may not be of supernatural origin, but in the messages that are given, in the devotions that have flowed from the apparition, there's nothing contrary to faith and morals. So it's sort of in a holding pattern, so to speak.
Yeah, interesting. Let's go to the phones. Marky in Antioch, Illinois. And folks, you can join us here at 877-766-3777. That's 877-ROME-777. Marky, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon, Drew. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I had a question. I was wondering, in our church, it's hard to catechize our people to believe in the real presence of Jesus in the Eucharist.
Mm-hmm.
And also, outside our church, our Protestant brethren are often misunderstanding our relationship with the Blessed Mother. And do these apparitions and stories of apparitions and the infighting about them, do they do a disservice to the Catholic faith in regards to Protestants, you know, saying sort of like, yeah, see, look at, they worship her, they travel all over the world to go see her, and, you know, things like that. I was just wondering on your opinions on that.
All right, Mike, I'll let you pick it up.
I've got a great quote from John Paul II on this. He says, veneration of Mary, when properly understood, can in no way take away from the dignity and efficacy of Christ, the one mediator. Mary, in fact, constantly points to her divine Son, and she is proposed to all believers as the model of faith, which is put into practice. So these miraculous phenomena are not a substitute for absolute faith in God. The centrality of our faith is found in the person, acts, and words of Jesus Christ. Apparitions are just sort of special insights that are given to saints throughout history. And, of course, belief in even approved private revelations are not required in the smallest way. So apparitions are a boost to our faith, but by no means are they a replacement for Christ as the center of our faith.
All right, there you go.
Thank you very much.
Thanks,
have a Marky. Great day.
I appreciate it. All right, and that's a really good point. Do the faithful have to believe in an approved apparition, Michael?
They do not.
That's right. So, like, even Fatima, we don't have to, right?
That's right. No matter with what sort of force or excitement or vigor that the church chooses to promote a given apparition, the Lourdes, the Fatimas, the Guadalupes of the world, we absolutely do not have to abide by them as they are private revelations.
All right, I got to take a break. When we come back, we'll take final calls, and we'll get some final thoughts also from Michael O'Neill. I'm Drew Mariani. This is Relevant Radio. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Relevant Radio.
Human beings made in the image and likeness of God are made for love. Indeed, at the core of our being, we long to love and to be loved in return.
Boy, I didn't realize this was going to be so tricky.
Dad, what are you doing?
Well, I've been trying to get into the archives for the last 4 hours. Maybe I need some more sand for weight so I don't set off any booby traps. What are you doing here?
It's Saturday. There's no school.
Oh, right.
Do you need some help?
No, I think I've almost got it figured out. Just hand me my fedora.
What's a fedora?
It's my hat over there. Give me that whip while you're at it, too, and I'm gonna turn off this music.
What kind of archives are these?
The audio archives from Relevant Radio. It's rumored that they have a ton of old shows in their archives.
Oh, is that all? I can show you how to do that.
Wait! How did you...
There you go. Which show did you want? Morning Air, The Drew Mariani Show, On Call, Go Ask Your Father, they're all right here.
That's amazing.
Dad?
Yes?
Why is your computer making jungle noises?
Oh, it's one of those relaxation CDs that your mother got me.
Can we stop it now?
You can catch any shows you've missed or listen to your favorite shows again through the Relevant Radio Audio Archives. They're easy to find. Just go to relevantradio.com and select the show you want under the Audio Archive link in the menu bar. Talk radio for Catholic life. This is Relevant Radio and online at relevantradio.com.
I've been to a number of priest meetings over the last year, and it was so inspiring because you got the feeling that here's just a lot of ordinary men who are trying their best.
Join Chuck Neff for spiritual direction on The Inner Life.
Life as you've never heard it. This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
All right, 5 before the hour. Welcome back, everyone. Hey, keep it tuned right here. Coming up on the other side of this coming break, we'll be joined by a former Protestant journalist, a convert to the Catholic faith, Wayne Weibel, who's written numerous books on his experiences in Medjugorje. We'll take an in-depth look at that reported apparition. Today is the anniversary of the first apparition there that occurred on June 24th, 1981. Right now, though, I'm speaking to Michael O'Neill, the Miracle Hunter, and you can check out his website, miraclehunter.com, an expert on Marian apparitions. And, Mike, I want to sneak one last call in. Robert, I don't have much time, so I'm going to let you share your thoughts pretty quickly with Mike and I.
Sure. Well, thank you. I appreciate
You're welcome.
It. I just want to say that... The church, the way I see it is, you know, the church has, that's where you should hang your hat on. You know, the mother in the church rather than mother in Medjugorje or mother in any other purported apparition. And the reason I say that is I'm coming from I have a background that has basically my wife and my children live in one of these communities right next to an old apparition, you know, right here in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the church is condemned.
Is that Nisida?
You know, yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Okay.
And, you know, it's amazing how people dance around, you know, the whole aspect and make excuses how, you know, well, it's, you know, it brings us closer to Mary and closer to God and whatnot, and a myriad of other excuses to dance around. Well, the church will eventually approve it. The church will eventually approve it. And my viewpoint is that if the local bishop doesn't approve it, obviously there's a reason, mm-hmm. you know, and that's where we should go, and we should be obedient and say no. And if it's really truly from right. God, really truly Mary appearing, then you would think that God would know what the bishop would or would not rule, and certainly in all the past apparitions,
right.
we see the bishop finally coming around and approving that because God has the capacity to do so.
All right, Robert, you know? I appreciate the call. I don't have much time. I'm going to let Michael respond to your comments. Again, I think Robert was bringing up the point of obedience to the church and the fact that we have the fullness of faith in the Catholic Church, and apparitions, although they may edify the faith, are not necessary for the faith.
Well, Drew, I think you said just best right there that while apparitions are interesting in the fabric of our faith and they do edify us and they do draw us closer to Christ through Mary, we should not get away from the centrality of our faith found in Jesus Christ, his person, acts, and words. So.
Well, and Mike, we have 30 seconds. I want to let people know, miraclehunter.com is your webpage. Lots of great stuff there, and they can look up any apparition, right, and see the current status with the church there.
That's right.
All right, well, good. We'll check it out. We'll also link to it at relevantradio.com. Stay with me, folks. When we come back, we'll take an in-depth look at Medjugorje, the message, the fruit, the history. I'll be joined by journalist and best-selling author Wayne Weibel. Don't go anywhere. It's a conversation you don't want to miss.